First of all, I'm just going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves and maybe briefly describe your involvement with the public statement and the call for support that have recently been released in regard to Delhi Sokolo.
So my name is Emma. I was a part-time worker at the deli between July of 2016 and the closure of the deli in November of 2016. Following the closure of the deli, I, like many other workers there, had not received my final paycheck or various important documents, such as my record of employment. I was contacted by other former workers at the deli who were beginning to realize quite how widespread these problems were. And as we began talking, we sort of realized that most workers who had worked at the deli in the past year and a half, to the best of our knowledge, were owed at least some form of wages, vacation pay, other indemnities, paperwork. And so that was what precipitated the formation of the committee. And that was because we understood that given that our individual requests for all of these things had been met with empty promises, evasiveness, simply lack of response, that perhaps joining together and making these demands together would be a stronger position from which to receive some sort of action, answers, accountability.
Okay, so my name's Cinder. I was also an employee at the deli. I started there, was one of the few people, who started there right from the beginning. So I got hired before the deli's opening in April 2015, and I stayed there until July 2016. So just around a year and 3 months. I think Emma spoke to this as well, for sure. So I quit in July 2016, following just being fed up in lots of ways, which I don't need to go into. But the ones I will speak to were, my frustrations around, trying on an individual basis, like so many of us did for so long, trying to communicate with the owners, Shane and Leia, to receive my vacation pay. So, after quitting, I try to communicate with them through various forms, leaving messages in person, going to the deli in person to talk to them, and not finding them there, emails, text messages, everything. That was about 5 months of that, actually. And maybe it was me being naive. a large part of me wants to believe people when they say, hey, it's coming. It'll be here really soon. I'm sure the other boss is taking care of it. Oh, no, I'm sure the other boss is taking care of it. I'm sure they have, I'm sure the other boss has really great intentions and cares about you so much. After 5 months, I was, gave an ultimatum on my own saying, if I don't receive my annual vacation pay for the entirety of the time that I worked there, which is, for the year and 3 months, that is owed to me, I'm going to be filing a complaint with the Nanzu Travail. Which I did. After filing that complaint, I also have been reaching out, one of the people who had been reaching out to other former, employees and asking them, hey, is it just me or did this also affect you? And there was a resounding, from the first three people I contacted, a resounding yes, they also owe me money and papers. And then that expanded, beyond what we even, what I even imagined, that would happen initially, but it expanded. We're representing 19 ex-employees of the deli, so that accounts for roughly 80% of all the workers that have ever been employed there.
So after we had sort of gotten in touch and started realizing how widespread this problem was, we started compiling a very comprehensive list of exactly what was owed to whom, and that took us a few weeks because there were so many people that were owed something by these employers. And once we had compiled that information, we sent two registered letters to our former employers making a number of demands So notably that we would be paid the wages that we're missing, that we would receive the paperwork that was also missing, and that they would meet with us in person to discuss these demands. And to this letter, we did not receive an adequate answer. We had asked that they correspond with us only by mail. We didn't receive a letter. We received an email that simply said that we would be contacted at a later date regarding the wages and that the papers were coming soon, which was pretty much what we had been hearing for about a month already at that point. And so it was following those communications that we decided to make a public statement and to ask for support. And part of that was because we felt that this was something that our communities deserved to know that was happening to us, and also that people in our communities would have valuable resources to support us in the struggle.
So I guess that's where I come in. My name is Fred Burrow. I'm a resident in St. Henry. I've been a community organizer there for quite a few years now, working on issues of tenant justice, but also involved in local workers' struggles through the Southwest Solidarity Network, which is kind of people who are affected by issues either at their work or in their homes, organizing together to help each other out. And I'm also currently working on a PhD about the history of community organizing and workers' struggles in the Southwest, in St. Henry more specifically. So these are things that are important to me, and also because I was a frequent client, I would say, at Deli Sokolo, because you know, there are many new in this current phase of intense gentrification that that the neighborhood is undergoing, new businesses. That most of us who have lived there for quite some time, who care about the neighborhood, what, you know, based just on principle, refuse to go to. This is one of the few that, some of us had decided to make an exception for, because it had been claiming for itself a reputation of kind of caring about social justice issues, and working to make itself accessible to the community. So of course, when I was, made aware of, in fact, the level of exploitation that was happening in that business, it quickly became clear to me that, that dream of a socially responsible capitalism was in fact just a dream. You know, I had a little hope there for 30 seconds, but of course, you know, we came back to our senses. And so I wanted to speak out, in favor or alongside of the folks who are working to get their stolen wages back.
Mm-hmm, thank you. And I'm also wondering, because your public statement or the public statement that was released emphasizes that the deli prioritized hiring folks who are queer, trans, and or racialized. And I'm just wondering how you see this playing a part in the ongoing dynamics of mistreatment from the deli's owners that you mentioned.
Okay, so I guess I'll start by speaking to that, and I'm just going to position myself as all three of those marginalized identities, so I'm a queer trans person of color. So the deli definitely, did kind of like a curated call for employees, through specifically doing outreach in like online community spaces for folks who are facing, folks who are queer, trans, racialized, facing barriers, systemic barriers to employment. So that's how I first heard about the job, and I was incredibly excited about it, and I was like, great, perhaps naively. But the idea of being able to, well, one, be employed at all, and two, be employed in a space where it would be ostensibly safer for me as a person who kind of embodies or like lives at the intersection of all those positionalities and identities. I feel like with that, with the curation of kind of a base of like marginalized employees along these lines, it also had this public impact or, you know, trickle effects through communities or folks who care about these issues in terms of deciding that they might want to support a business that is also supporting us, right? So that was kind of like a subtle branding on their part, in the sense that, yeah, people believed that this would be a space that would be a safer space and a space they wanted to support. So the ways that I personally saw this curation of marginalized employees, as one of them myself, being linked to these patterns of mistreatment and the like relationship between those two was, like I mentioned, a lot of us are people who face systemic barriers to employment and are often in much more of a position to be poor and to have, you know, no income or very little income. And so being employed there and having to deal with issues like receiving our paychecks late pretty much every single payroll day and having to ask for our pay repeatedly or chase around the owners to try and get paid that every second week was a huge issue. At the same time, I didn't leave. Right. I think that's a question that people have brought to us saying, you know, if it was so bad or if it, you know, you weren't getting paid, like, you're silly. Like, why didn't you just leave? And that's what the, you know, there needs to be this understanding that not all of us have all these other opportunities to leave too, or a solid base to fall back upon, or like savings that we've saved up through being able to access whatever, resources and stable employment over a long period of time. We're also people who have our labor often very undervalued and unappreciated. So I stayed and I put up with these mistreatments because it was a shot at me getting an income at all.
Yeah, I think Cinder has spoken really beautifully to that point, but I guess I would just add that we felt that the particularity of this call out for marginalized workers was one of the things that made the mistreatment that happened in this business very notable to us. Unfortunately, I think that this kind of wage theft and exploitation is very, very common in the food service industry, but we thought that it was sort of particularly notable in a business that purported to have these kinds of progressive values.
Fred, would you like to speak a little bit more about how you see these issues being relevant or how they correspond to perhaps larger systemic issues of like labor rights, labor precarity, and also generally small business organizational structures?
Sure. I think it's important to ground the discussion of this particular workplace conflict or instance of stolen wages in the broader context of the neighborhood. And so what's happening in the neighborhood now, for about 10 to 15 years now, we've seen a massive gentrification of the area. So the widespread construction of condominiums, the skyrocketing of rent, in a predominantly low-income tenant neighborhood, and as a sort of consequence of that, the opening of fancy luxury sort of destination businesses. And one of the main arguments for that form of economic development of a neighborhood that has historically been a poor one is that it brings jobs. And so, you know, those of us who are low income and who live in the neighborhood and who at one time or another have had that sort of job, knows that in fact these are jobs that come with levels of precarity, and instability and exploitation, that, you know, are not necessarily prone to economic development or to, you know, having a more secure and comfortable standard of living. In fact, you know, we sort of go from one dishwashing job to another. And especially based in the cycle of gentrification in which, with skyrocketing commercial rent, restaurant endeavors of that sort, open and close all the time. That being said, I think that those of us in the community who, you know, who care about these issues, who organize around workers' struggles, tenants' rights, we're, as I said, willing to give a bit more of a chance to this particular business. And in fact, I've done interviews myself, notably on CBC a couple months ago with Shane, the owner of the business, as the kind of spokesperson for the middle of the road. Like, I'm doing this capitalist venture, but I'm also like caring about social justice issues and grounded in the community. All of this says to me, in fact, that the model itself is the problem. That when we take an area of low income and marginalized peoples and hold out to them a prospect for improving their lives that is based on the profit model, it's inevitably those people who get screwed in the end. And I think that there's a misconception amongst what could probably be described as like the soft left or the liberal left, in organizing activist circles in general, that there is some way to do capitalist endeavors in an ethical manner. You know, we see this at places like Casa del Popolo or other sort of like lefty leaning businesses in that way. But the inherent nature of those things, and I think that anybody who has worked on the bottom scale of those endeavors, and not in fact, you know, as the people who own them, know that that's an inherently exploitative relationship. So, I mean, I think that the lesson to be taken from this, beyond the fact that the folks who work there need to be paid as soon as possible with no compromises or excuses, the lesson that we need to learn more collectively is that there's no ethical way to harness an unethical system. All of us need to be oriented in a more collective and intentional way to breaking down that system and to finding ways that we can survive in a capitalist system that don't involve exploiting each other.
For sure. Thanks so much for those words, Fred. I guess my next question is more targeted toward Cinder and Emma and the rest of the collective. So in your recent release of this public statement, how have Shane Grin and Leah Freeman, the owners of the deli, reacted or engaged with, or perhaps failed to engage with the concerns and the demands that you've made?
Yeah. So after publishing the public statement, both of the owners have left Facebook comments with regards to the statement. Unfortunately, the content of those comments is largely more of the same of what we've been hearing all along, which is, we're doing this, please wait, you will be contacted at a later date, which isn't any new information, nor is it an adequate response. The crux of our demands is to receive our pay, which is long overdue, which we haven't received yet, and to receive the legal documents that should have been provided to us within 10 days of the termination of our employment, which we still haven't received, for which there really is no excuse for why we haven't received those documents. For some employees, this has also interfered with their EI applications, so there are very serious consequences to the fact that we haven't received our pay and our documents that we are owed. We also, in our letter to our employers, specified that they should direct all their communication to us via mail, which they have not respected. We have yet to receive a singular piece of mail from either of the employers.
And just to add on to that, I just want to specify that the reason we asked for registered mail was on the advice of a legal coordinator, who was encouraging us to build up our, like, repertoire of, like, evidence. And so that was with the understanding that registered mail that is sent to us and is signed by them constitutes as, like, a binding, contract, whereas Facebook comments or phone calls definitely do not. I would also like to name the fact, going back to the nature of like why we chose to organize collectively, is that we recognize that there is power in like us sticking together. And when we asked for our pay, we said, you will pay us collectively and by this date. We don't want the owners, they've already done this a little bit, we basically want to avoid the buying out of our collective members and causing them to, let's say, you know, withdraw from this process because they don't have a stake in it anymore. So we want to keep our numbers strong by doing that, and asking for our money or demanding our money collectively and all at once. On a similar note, the reason why we asked for registered mail to be sent to one centralized address is with the same, motto in mind, basically, right? Where, there is one address that is fixed, and it is a way to communicate with all of us collectively. We don't invite the owners to continue reaching out to individuals of our committee, trying to barter or make individual promises which they may or may not keep.
Previously, before we had formed the committee and were directing all of our communications collectively, people had been trying to contact the employers on an individual basis to get their pay and paperwork. And we realized that we were all receiving very different answers about what was happening, when we would be paid, when we would receive paperwork. And so part of the reason that we were asking for to be communicated with only as the committee is so that there is no room for people to get different information on individual bases.
And one last thing I'd like to add, in terms of, since the owner's reactions to us or communications with us since the public statement, what has happened since releasing this statement is that we, as much as they weren't on our terms, we elicited some response from the owners, which is more than can be said for lots of the people who were representing in their previous individual communications with them. Speaking for myself, I have sent them multiple messages and tried to contact them and set ultimatums on my own individual basis, you know, like I said, for the past 5 months. And in the past 2 or 3 months, you know, there's been a severe drop-off in communication, so it's gone into non-response territory. So one thing I will say is that it's elicited a response at all, which is, it's different for me.
Can maybe just add that, you know, St. Henry has been since the mid-19th century, essentially, a battleground between people trying to make money and people trying to survive. And people who live in the neighborhood who have roots in that struggle, know where their allegiances lie pretty clearly. So I think that can comfortably say that the neighborhood is behind the workers, of the deli. And you know, whatever it takes for them to get paid as soon as possible, that's what we'll do.
All right. So I guess my last question, is, for the general public. So if people want to show support for you at this time, what are the most effective ways to do that?
We have a social media presence on Facebook, and we also have a website, which you can find at
socolocommittee.wordpress.com. And on Facebook, you can use the @ handle, which is amazing. So it's @ Wage Reclamation Committee.
And so we encourage people to keep sharing our story, talking to their friends and community, and to keep watching these spaces for further information, updates, information about actions. We're certainly not going anywhere, so there will be more to follow.